back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are going to get back out on the Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play. I was playing last weekend down at the one of the local sports wagering places before we go to the Super Bowl, and I will be Super Bowling in Los Angeles, California, week after next. Full coverage from there presented by our friends at Wise Markets as well as Raskin Global. Don Moeller has been booking the guests around here this week, the non-sports related guests, and we always go back to our favorites, don't we, Don Moeller?
We do, and this next guest is certainly one of our favorites and a regular on Baltimore Positive, the CEO of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, LIRS, doing important work, Krishanti Vignaraja. Krish, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you guys.
Great to see you. Happy New Year. Hey, listen, we're starting every segment. We got a little pop quiz for everybody. And if you don't have an opinion, you don't have an opinion. But before we get to the important stuff, NFL playoff overtime rules, should they be changed?
So my husband's from upstate New York. The Bills lost.
Enough said.
I think that making it mirror the college rules makes a lot of sense. I think it's fair. But I wanted to express my bias in terms of, I feel like it would have allowed for the Bills to pull it off.
These poor Buffalo people.
Sunday night was, other than the Buffalo wings, was a gloomy night in the Vignaraja household, was it?
It was, although it's really funny because my daughter is a big Ravens fan. And so even as we were watching the game, she was like, I still like the Ravens better. what's also funny is she loves Florida just because she associates it with beaches and warm weather. And so as Tampa Bay was playing, she was rooting for Florida. And I have my own issues of just having briefly lived in Boston with Brady. So I was just kind of like, do I really have to root for the Buccaneers? But it is nice to know that through it all, Alana, my daughter, she still has.
How old is your daughter?
She's four.
Yeah, you're raising her right. Krish Vignaraja here. We're not going to tell her brother that we've had her on two consecutive times without Theroux being here.
I'm going to get a text,
no, please.
I guarantee you.
Please make sure
Krish,
you rub that
appreciate
in his
this,
face.
Right? So I want to say this. We're sponsored by Goodwill Industries, and I did a big donation to them, a truckload of like old Raven stuff and radio station stuff and all sorts of furniture, different stuff like that. But my wife and I were finally cleaning our place. We moved last week out to the suburbs. I'm not really proud of that. It was kind of like the place. People keep asking, you moved to the county, you hate the city. No, we looked at Anne Arundel County. We looked at Howard. We looked at Harford County. We just found the best situation for us. So we didn't have any. I know Don wants me to. You move back to the county.
We're happy to have you. But we love the city.
Here's what happened.
We love the city.
My wife found a whole bunch of stuff. I know you find this hard to believe that she had a lot of stuff when we moved. And she found a lot of stuff she didn't want to have anymore. And a lot of it was feminine, female oriented, mother oriented, lady oriented, clothing oriented. And she put two boxes together.
Descriptors of how to describe all
this. I was going to say, Krish, I was not going to call timeout.
Timeout. We purged so many different things during this. So she took the important things that a woman might need, and she said, I want to give this to the Afghan refugees and I that are here. And I said, I know someone. So there's that. And I just want you to know that my wife was thinking about your cause without even knowing you or the fact that I even talked to you, because she wouldn't listen to this crazy show.
That's awesome. I mean, and this is the generosity of Americans, right? I am so proud. That is awesome.
Well Krish, we need some. Go ahead, Nestor.
Well, I just, what you do kind of struck me the first time around, because I'm seeing more media on this, and obviously the media of people hanging on the airplanes, that'll never go away. Certainly on the right side of the political, to use that as. But we're 6-8 months out on this. There are real human beings who need help, and there's people like you right in the harbor, right around the corner, trying to help people who we were 6 months ago saying we wanted to help, and now here's a chance to help people, and you're at the front line of doing that. I think that's the reason we bring you on here, so we can help some people.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I do think it is amazing to see how welcoming our country has been. And frankly, this should be a point of pride in the sense of it was a military might, right? It was the strength of our ability to evacuate 124,000 in just the span of a couple months. And then 75,000 of them were Afghans who came to the U.S., and many of whom are in our region. So the Maryland, Virginia, D.C. region is actually one of the top destinations for so many of these families. So they went to the military bases initially, and then now the goal is to get them all off the military bases by February 15th. So it's going to be a busy next couple weeks.
Don, I saw a story this week, and I didn't, you see, Don and I don't trade notes, but like last week, my wife was watching a news story in Philadelphia, and there was a kitchen there feeding Afghan refugees, but feeding food that is of that is native to them as the one thing that may be comfortable for folks who've been banished or killed if they were left behind or relatives behind with the Taliban, that they came over. Tell me locally a story like that of something you're doing here, because I know this is what you do all day long, right?
Yeah. 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 And it's been amazing how people have been trying to, approach this with cultural sensitivity, right? So it's actually really cool. Our one of our local offices, but don't judge, across the Virginia border in Northern Virginia, we have had Secretary of State Blinken visit. On Martin Luther King Day, we had Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield, who's the UN ambassador, and Senator Warner come and do a day of service. And at that office, when we first started it, of the 14 staff we hired, 13 were Afghan, and most of whom were newly arrived. So these are people who got off a plane in October, and come November, they're already starting to work, hoping to give back. And I think it's just amazing how, when you mention your wife donating, we've seen that all across our state. In Baltimore City, I mentioned, right, about our headquarters, we still have donations coming in. So many people who've stopped by and said, what can I do? How can I help? When we've said, hey, what we need right now is actually SIM cards, SIM cards show up. When we post a, Walmart or Amazon list and we say, these are the things that people need, they're immediately purchased. And I just think that it is amazing that people aren't just kind of, cleaning out their closet and saying, all right, well, this is just trash that I want to give. They're saying, what is it that these families need? If they need halal meat, that's what we'll give them. If they need school books because the kids are starting to enter our public schools, that's what we're doing. And I just think that it is amazing to see. And so that's why I feel like I'm really lucky in my job.
Well, Chris, there are many, many folks, not unlike Nestor and Jen, sitting out there now who have, I know, for example, we have one that my wife keeps. There's an old a wash tub type thing. And when she is getting ready to clean out some clothes, she'll fold them up and put them in there and say, we have to get them to someone who can use them. So someone's listening now and they're saying, boy, this sounds like a good cause. And they've got, a whole bunch of clothes. How can they get them to you so they get to the right folks?
Yeah, great question. And appreciate it. So we are really looking for everything still. I mean, bear in mind, right, that once we pick these families up at the airport, we are finding them affordable housing. That is one of the biggest challenges we're having in our region, which may feel surprising to say when we know in Baltimore, right, there's a huge opportunity to convert some of the, the row homes into inhabitable places that these families can come and settle. But it's everything from clothes to kitchen appliances. Our headquarters is right across from the Maryland Science Center. So we do regularly take drop-offs, but typically what we try to do is have a donation drive. So you can get in touch by going to LIRS.org and you can contact us and we can try to arrange for a drop-off. But bear in mind that we have, since our last conversation, we've opened up two new offices in Maryland. So one is in Catonsville, another is in Frederick, and that's in addition to our one in Hydesville. So wherever you are listening to this, we probably have a local site that you could come by.
Chris, you talk about immigration and refugees, and I want to give you an opportunity because not everybody people know who your brother is, a little famous, and talking about issues and some of these issues you're talking about with the city, but they might not even know your family's story in regard to this. And I want to give you a chance to talk about it because you were born into this. You're born into this work and through your family and through something that happened a generation ago that still sort of moves you in that direction. And I know I've talked to your brother at length, and we've talked to you at least once about it, but for our audience who's unaware of what it means to be a refugee and to be a child of a refugee.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Also because it'll allow me to highlight some of these photos where I think I came out looking better than my brother.
I would agree with that, by the way. I agree with that. You can tell
my sense. Because it actually, and I mean clothing-wise.
I'll even say it on the radio.
What I mean by that is, you know, when you talk about these donations, right, my family came from a tropical island. My parents fled Sri Lanka just as it was kind of entering civil war. And it was because we were part of the religious and ethnic minority, simply because of who we prayed to. People were not just persecuted, but they were killed. And so when we came to the U.S., we came to Baltimore, and I was 9 months. My brother was three. And thank God we had a chance to create a new life for ourselves. And I think what we represented is what so many immigrant communities who came to this country, whether it was more recent, like when we came in 1980, or older generations, you know, sometimes people wonder, where's the O'Meara part come from? Because I got the Vignaraja. It's my husband, Colin Patrick O'Meara, and his ancestors came a little longer ago than mine, but they came from Ireland because of the potato famine, right? His ancestors were looking for what so many of our ancestors were looking for, a better life here, to be able to raise their kids and pay taxes and live in decency and safety. And so I think for me, part of this work is just about paying it forward. When I talk about the Afghan staff, that's why they quickly rolled up their sleeves. Just as they were settling in, they wanted to play their part in helping the next generation, the next wave of immigrants. And that's the beauty of Baltimore, right? We used to be the second or third hub after Ellis Island, and that was part of the vitality of our city. And so when I think about Baltimore's future and I think about the population decline, to me, this is where immigration and what I'm working on every day is a part of the solution. We know, you know, I was talking to a congresswoman from Utica, New York. She had a Trump picture behind her. And I sort of went into this conversation with sort of my body armor on. But she was the one who was talking about how, you know, she knows that Utica was revitalized because of immigration. I shared with some of my president's council members who are, you know, from Baltimore, a story about Detroit, Michigan, and how immigrant communities have been able to sort of stop that tide of people flowing out. We're launching a program called New American Cities, which is about partnering with employers in Baltimore in order to find those, you know, jobs that people need to fill. We're hosting job fairs for Afghans because they come and they either come with skills or drive, but they really want to work. And for me, this is the win-win that immigration represents.
Chris, can you, it's such important work, and you know, I know that the faith-based community plays a key role. I know that's true in the community where I live. One of the things, it seems to me that so much of what we're trying to deal with in modern society is this fear of change, that things aren't the way they were. They don't look the way I think they should look anymore. And we create boogeymen and boogie women. You interact directly with thousands of these families that you're trying to assist. Describe, put a face on it for our listeners. Who are they? What do they care about? What do they want in their future? Why would I want them in my neighborhood? Some people would say.
Yeah. So simply put, they are us, right? And we are them because that's, you know, unless you're a part of the indigenous community or you were forced over here in slavery or through slavery, someone in your lineage made a decision to come to America, and thank God for that. They come and they have ambitions. They have hope for their kids. They want to contribute.
Kids like us, you and me, right?
Exactly right.
Right. My dad that's came right. in 65, so I got you, you know?
Right. And I think this is where it's important to remember, like, the xenophobia, right? The anti-immigration sentiment. This is not new. right? My husband's ancestors felt it. So whether you were Irish or Italian or Mexican, there's always sadly been this sentiment. And so this is where each of us have to be empathetic about it and understand our personal connection to this, because this is the way we created the nation that we live in. And so the fear, the change that you're describing, part of why I think it's really important for us to talk kind of openly about this is, look, things are changing, whether we like it or not, right? The birth rate of Americans is declining, lowest in census history. More Americans are retiring. We no longer have a pyramid, right? We have this inverted pyramid. And so when you think about Medicare and Social Security and how we keep them afloat, if you think about how do we not become Japan with a stagnant economy, if you think about how we go toe-to-toe with China, we have an opportunity, and frankly, it is part of our patriotic duty to understand that, like, making America the great nation that we all have kind of known and loved is partly continuing to accept immigration. Why is it that our coffee shops, local coffee shops are closed? It's in part because we have the lowest immigration rate to our country that we've seen. So when we hear about some of these tropes of, well, you know, immigrants are coming here to rape and pillage and they're taking American jobs, none of it's true. When you look at refugee communities and the top 10 cities that have absorbed the highest number of refugees, all of them have become safer in terms of commercial crimes, right? Things that we know about in Baltimore City, right? Violent crimes. The one exception in the study that was undertaken across the country was West Springfield, Massachusetts, and it was because they were going through an opioid epidemic. And so I think that it's just really important for us to understand that they are us, in the sense that the families, they come, they want to enroll their kids in school, they want to make sure that they can contribute, that they get jobs, that they become entrepreneurs. When you look at the entrepreneurship rate of immigrants, it's twice that of native-born Americans. And when you think about the jobs that they create, they actually create better-paying jobs than what native-born Americans are creating. And so this is where I just think that people should not be afraid of this. We should actually embrace it as the way to keep our nation great.
Chris, how significant is the language barrier? Is it an issue? And if it is an issue, what role is your organization trying to play in that? Because to me, that seems like a barrier.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because it is more a barrier for the older refugees and immigrant population than come for the younger, than the younger ones. The younger ones, they may have been watching Baywatch, and we can kind of question the decision to watch that for separate reasons. But many of them speak, good or great English, especially when you think about, you know, the recent Afghan population. Many of them worked with our U.S. Troops or in the embassy or with a development contractor. And so they had to speak English as part of being selected for those jobs. But we know that some are not proficient, but they have an ambition to learn. And I think that that means a lot because they're being immersed into communities. We support English as a second language training. We have a lot of our volunteers who are happy to mentor. And that's been amazing. In the past year, we have more than 100,000 volunteers who went to the LIRS.org website to want to be able to help with this work. And so that's a great example of where any listener out there, if they want to help, whether it's tutoring a child or working with an older refugee, there's absolutely opportunities to get involved.
Krish Vikhnaraja is our guest. She's at LIRS. Tell everybody what LIRS is. Go ahead, Krish.
Yeah, it's a long one. Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service.
So two questions for you, two-parter. Your parents came over, obviously to not be murdered and to create a better life for you and through and the rest of moving forward, right? What did, when they got off the boat, as they would say, what did they find here? And tell me about the people who made it inside of an airplane, not hanging on, coming out of Afghanistan, and they're over here now. What I often think about the Nina, the Pinta, like what that journey looks like until you get here and you get whatever solidified ground, a house, a job, that period where you find them, where they left this other world whenever 6 months ago. I would think we don't even want to know what the first hour, day, weekend. I moved this weekend with boxes. I'm American. I'm figuring out how to get ID and move around and insurance, like all this American stuff. To show up here and not have anything is something that I think many of us have never thought about, but everyone who comes in front of you has dealt with, and I know we talked to Brandon Scott a lot about this trauma and what that represents. Every one of these people have been traumatized in some way, correct?
Yeah. And we work, we have sort of a particular expertise when it comes to children. So we are caring for some of the, we call them unaccompanied Afghan children, UACs. And I have never seen.
That's an unthinkable. I mean, that's something when we see the border shots on the Mexican border of children. You're finding these children right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of us saw those images of like a baby being handed to a U.S. soldier. And when you see that, some of the questions you hear are, how could a parent do that? How would a parent, you know, even on the southern border, be willing to send a young child over alone? And it's not because they're bad parents. It's because the life they face by remaining at home is actually worse than the prospect of what risk they could face on a treacherous journey up north. And I think that is to give you some color of like what impossible choices parents are faced. I think, you know, it's both are great questions because I think they are also connected. I very much see in what they're experiencing a little bit of what my family felt. It was different in the sense that our trip was obviously planned. You know, we had our bags packed and plane tickets in hand to move to Nigeria. When, you know, thank God our visas came through and we were able to come to the U.S. But these families, they're lucky.
You had help. You, like literally, your family had something like help. My father had help coming from Venezuela. You know, he didn't swim here and have to figure it out. He had people here helping him. These people don't have that. You are these people, right?
Right. No, exactly. And you know, bear in mind, I mean, what is nice is that there are Afghan communities in places like our region or Texas or California. And that is why you see a significant number of the population that are coming off the military bases requesting to go to places like Virginia and Maryland and Texas and California. But it is true that they are coming. If they're lucky, they came with a knapsack. Otherwise, they were evacuated with just the clothes on their backs. For us, we were lucky in the sense that, you know, my dad had approached, my parents had approached the Baltimore City superintendent. At the time, Girardi was his last name, and my dad interviewed and then got a job, thank God. And so that weekend we moved into the basement apartment that we lived in Edmondson Heights that he had helped my parents find. The vice principal of Edmondson High is actually the gentleman who helped literally move us into the apartment. My dad had, you know, a couple hundred dollars and he was sort of touting it proudly, showing that, you know, he had something. He didn't know anything about Baltimore. And so it was, thank God, the vice principal who said, this is Baltimore, man, put that away. You know, he helped vouch for my parents as they started a bank account. And then they saved very quickly because, you know, they first had to navigate the public transportation system. So he would walk to Route 40 and he'd hop on the bus. But as soon as we could, he saved because we came from a tropical island and the idea of like, you know, we needed a car, especially with a young family. And so we bought this lime green station wagon. But it's true that like when my parents were looking for jobs, when they had to run an errand, it was the neighbors in the apartment complex who were there for us, right? They were our neighbors, but they became our friends and family.
They didn't look like you or talk like you or have the background, right?
But that was the amazing part of our community, right? It didn't matter because we were all kind of in it together. When I launched my campaign for governor, there's a reason I did it outside of that apartment complex because that was my family, right? That was my community. That was home. And I just think that I'm lucky enough because I get to see that work of welcome still alive and well. I think for a lot of your listeners, sometimes you turn on the TV and you hear political pundits and all they're spewing is vitriol and hate and they're making this a divisive issue. When I think that when you think about faith communities and veterans groups and business leaders coming together, they all know that this work is the right thing to do and it's a smart thing to do.
Nestor Krishvignaraja giving us a little hope and a little sunshine on a very cold January day.
Show folks how they can help out right now. Like my wife, and I said feminine, meaning it was female related stuff. She was thinking about a mother here with a child. Like, what could I do? So if somebody else has that in their heart, what can they do to help you?
Yeah. So if you go to www.liris.org, there's a tab for taking action. And if you specifically are interested in learning more about the Afghan allies who've come to the region, you can scroll down and you can click on there. You can sign up to volunteer or just let us know that you want to be involved. And it's a great way to get engaged.
Resources, take action, their work, about us, and of course, donate. You can reach Krish Vignaraj, who's always a great guest. I owe you two crab cakes now. Like we're getting behind. You know, the Maryland Lottery presents the crab cake tour. We're going to get back out. I think you and I will get together for a crab cake. Don, in May, do you think she'll want to get together with me in the city if we do this?
I think we have to do a twofer for that. We have to have the Vignaraja family on. That should be quite entertaining. If it's anything like my brother and me when we get together, that will be quite entertaining.
Never a dull moment, for sure. Looking forward to it.
Appreciate you, Krish. Thanks for coming on. Don Mulder, former Baltimore County Executive, is my partner in crime for all these wise conversations on Baltimore Positive. We're going to be at Super Bowl 50-something in Los Angeles next week. At some point, I speak English, but not Roman numerals right now, but I'm trying to add it all up. We're going to add up who's going to be there. I will be there the entire week at the Los Angeles Convention Center. All of that brought to you by our friends at Raskin Global and, of course, our friends at the Blondell Miller Schuler as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop telling good stories and talking about things Baltimore positive.